When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Forever Dog.
Hi gang, this week Clay Tatum. If this is the first time you listening to this podcast and you don't know who I am, I'm famous for being Channing Tatum's father. So I just wanted to come in here and just say that today's episode is a little different. Okay gang, today's episode, I have my friend Kurt Neal on, and he recently made a feature film, 5 days. And when I say recently, I mean he made it last year. So we mainly just talk about the movie that he made, and I think we have a lot of good goofs on this episode, and we have a blast, and you can learn something too if you want to make a feature film in 5 days. I'm just here to say that. The movie is called Derek's Dead, and it's for pre-order right now. If you go to iTunes, you can pre-order it. And this movie has past guests on it, like Anna Sergina and Calmazzano, and it also has a lot of other funny people. And also Rod is in this movie. So if you're curious what it's like, if you want to watch a feature film that has Rod in it, and watch this movie. I mean, I'm not in it. I help shoot the movie, and what I mean by that is I held one of the cameras, but anywho gang, that's today's episode. We talk about our friend's movie, and I hope you like it, and I hope you pre-order his movie. It's called Derek's Dead. It's on iTunes, and it comes out December 15th.
Okay, bye gang, you'll be enjoying the podcast.
Hi everyone, my name is Clay Tatum, welcome to the podcast. I'm currently in bed right now, and a lot of people are in bed sick with COVID, but I'm in bed sick of COVID. So cut it out, people. And also we have Whitmer Thomas. Whitmer Thomas is the star of The Golden One. If you don't know what The Golden One is, it is an experiment Whit did to see if we gave him random music tracks, if he can make up lyrics to them, and that's what he did, and that's what the whole special is about. We're also have Ronnie Thomas Berry. He's a brother from another mother, and what I mean by that is we don't have the same mom, and he's also 49. Oh. So I don't know if he would even
How old am I?
You're 49 years old, and I'm 24. So it doesn't even make sense that we would be brothers. We're also
your dad,
and we're also here with Kurt Neal. Kurt Neal is famously my little brother, and he's here to teach us how to make a feature film. Welcome to the podcast, gang.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
You know,
older brothers, both my older brothers from another mother's.
Thanks. Thanks for doing the podcast, Kurt.
Hey, you're welcome, Whit boy. Thank for you.
Right. If you don't know what's going on right now, what's in the car? He had to go to Pasadena because he wanted to eat at a restaurant.
He wanted to eat outside of Chipotle, so he
keeps dropping the phone. Though. It's making me dizzy.
Hey, Kurt, does COVID does that exist in Oregon?
Barely. It's here, but like it's chill. It's not.
Chick-fil-A.
What?
What are you talking about?
Whit, we lost Whit, I think.
Oh, Whit was doing a monologue. We didn't know.
Really?
Lost me? Can you hear me now?
Now? Back now.
Yeah, I can hear you, my man.
Okay.
COVID exists in Oregon, but barely. Like, it's Oregon's doing pretty good. I mean, we got a bunch of sick people and some dead people, which is awful, but less than other states. So
that's good. Now, what's it like? Like, is everybody freaking out about it and talking about it nonstop like they are in the big city?
No, nobody's talking about anything. Everybody's like trying to do the same thing they always used to do. But now they're like, oh, I got to wear a mask. Okay. Like there's still like, nobody thinks it's real, partially because we've been relatively untouched comparatively. But I just do DoorDash and wear a mask and my parents don't leave the house for the most part. And everyone else is trying to do the exact same thing. I don't hear anybody talking about it.
I'm pretty much untouched too right now, but that's because I've been distancing myself from Rod.
That's smart. Rod's one of the scariest ones.
Well, Rod is a COVID denier because he denies he has COVID.
I'm not a COVID denier. I just don't have COVID.
How many weeks in a row now have you had it, Rod?
I haven't had it.
Well, he's been a COVID denier this entire time.
Since day one.
You could have had it the whole time and not even known it because you were denying that you had it, is what Witt's trying to say.
I'm just saying that I've never had it. I've been tested and I didn't have it.
Can you provide evidence of the negative tests, please?
I mean, that's from a while ago. I'd have to search for it.
We'll wait.
Yeah, we'll wait for it.
Well, Rod, like everything that the government is involved with, he thinks that the tests are rigged.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think there is COVID in the test.
They were also made by Dominion, the web server that got the drives stolen in Connecticut. So
exactly.
How are we supposed to trust any of those tests at that point?
And when I told Rod that I got my COVID test through Dominion, he flipped out.
Yeah, I know. Rod thinks they're the worst. Rod thinks they're part of the deep state.
And I told him, Rod, this is my eighth time of getting COVID. I don't know what to tell you.
A nice close-up of Witt's ear right now.
Yeah, man. Looks good. This is
all right, guys.
What is going on?
I'm just driving. I don't know.
Is that how you drive? And talk on the phone?
I'm trying to provide y'all with the best sound while also being able to – I want to hear what you're saying.
We're getting the POV of the phone during a normal phone call.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, I think.
It's cool. It's nice.
Wait, does your car beep?
Yeah, it beeps anytime a car comes close to me.
Oh, because it's scared of cars?
Yeah, my car's a bitch.
Hey, Kurt, I heard you made a movie. What's this all about?
Yeah, man, you were there. Don't you
fucking
remember?
Yeah, I know.
I remember.
It's called
Derek's Dad is Not Dead, but Derek's Dead. No, it's called Derek's Dead. It's a movie. Yeah, you were there. Rod was there.
Yeah.
Well, and the sequel is going to be Derek's Dad.
Right? Dunks is the sequel.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
It's really cool. It's all about Derek's dad dunking.
So, yeah, so Kurt, I remember.
Remember when the plot was about a failed dunk, Clay?
Oh, yeah. And I told you not to do it.
Yeah, you made me change it. The whole movie, you wrote the movie.
Here's the thing. What happened was Kurt came over to my house one day. He was like, hey, I want to run an idea by you. Yeah. And I just talked it. I was just like, oh, hey, that sounds good. Why don't you do this also? And then that meant I'm now a cameraman and I'm on set every day.
I trust the guy. I trust the guy. I want the guys I trust to hold the important pieces of equipment. So I made Clay hold a really big camera that probably we didn't need.
Yeah, and a lens that was twice as big as the camera. Why was it so big? What?
4K. It's shot 4K. That's what it's all about these days, baby.
Yeah.
That's weird because my webcam shoots 4K, and it's like this big.
It's the smallest thing in the world. You can carry it anywhere.
Yeah, you could really just take it around.
Well, but you also got that from Dominion, so can we really trust that webcam?
I think I can.
Rod's talking about the smallest thing in the world that he carries everywhere. Can I try the joke again? Can I try the joke again?
Yeah, give everybody clear the room for Clay's joke real quick.
Hey. So, Rod's talking about something, this world's smallest thing, and he carries around with him everywhere he goes. Tell him, I've heard this before.
Yeah.
Talking about his freaking penis.
Talking about his tiny feet.
I don't think that's the smallest thing in the world.
Remember when we thought we were going to impeach President Trump by just telling him everyone about his small hands?
That'll get him out of office. He'll be so ashamed. He'll leave.
Yeah. Or that he pee-pees on people or likes to get pee-peed on.
Yeah, sorry, it's the other way around. Thanks.
Yeah, it's like, all right, you can't kink shame the guy.
Look, we didn't know if he got stung by a jellyfish.
That's
maybe
true.
It was saving his life. So ever think about that one, folks?
Wait, did he get peed on, or Clay? This is your dad.
No. This is my dad. Sorry, everyone. This is he was in Russia, and he went to a room that Obama stayed in, and he had prostitutes pee on each other in the bed, and he filmed it.
He just watched.
Yeah, and then some guy named Michael Steele said he had the tapes, the pee-pee tapes.
Michael Steele is a made-up guy.
That's and remember the guy from The Stupids? The guy from The Stupids looked for the PP tape and had a Vice show because of it.
That sounds fun, dude.
Yeah, guy from Stupids looks for PP tape.
Yeah, I'm going to miss Trump because of the guy from The Stupids PP tape show.
He was good for comedy, man. That's what everybody says.
One of my favorite shows was the guy from The Stupids PP tape the show.
Kurt, do you like making movie, and will you make another one?
I hated making this one, and I want to make a bunch more.
Yeah.
This was a nightmare. You were there.
Yeah. You looked miserable the whole time.
I was very fragile at every second of every day. But I made it through with the help of many friends and good people. Yeah. But, no, I hated it because of my existential crisis I was already going through at the time. But I feel better now. So now I want to make movies some more because I want it to be fun. I want to do it again, but I want it to be fun this time.
Remember when I threw up? Remember that?
Clay threw up because the day before the last night, essentially, we went out and had beers. Everyone had three beers tops.
Yeah.
But the next day, everyone but me felt the worst they've ever felt. And Clay, we kept having to wait to shoot because Clay was barfing. So Clay would barf, and then he'd come back and pick up the biggest camera in the world and shoot a scene for 4 minutes. And then he'd go barf again, and it was the worst. And then we finished, and we all just said, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
It wasn't
Why were you barfing?
But here's the thing. He had three beers.
Well, I had some double IPAs in my tummy that I had to get out.
And, three or four pretty long days. It's a grueling experience, but it's a good, funny movie. You're going to love it.
You shot the whole movie in 4 days?
Yeah.
Six, kind of, but most of it in four. There was two half days.
And this movie is it's already got a lot of buzz because of my car's in it.
Yeah, everybody's been, thanks to you being so famous, everybody has now discovered that your car, your old car, and I think Rod's car, is in the movie quite a bit. It's featured. So now people are talking oh my God, that really hot comedian Whit Thomas, I heard his car is in this new movie, Derek's Dead.
Well, my car is
now available on iTunes.
It's crazy that my car is in two movies that came out this year.
You know what else is in the movie?
What else?
And it's just great in it?
Your movie.
Friggin' Rod.
I guess it's a comedy special.
Yeah, Rod is in the movie, and he has a star turning. It's pre-haircut Rod, which is – it's crazy that you caught him pre-haircut.
I know. We're really lucky to have Rod. I'm so glad I mic'd him for the scenes he's in.
Yeah.
So we can hear him.
I didn't wear a mic. I refused.
I said to Rod, Rod, I need a guy next to this guy that talks. You want to be that guy? But then, of course, because I improvise everything, Rod speaks. Because he's not just a mute standing there. So I blew it, as usual.
Rod, how long were you how long were you on set that day, Rod?
I think I was on set for at least 8 hours. I got there around noon because we had to shoot.
I didn't care about Rod's day. Give me your hours, Rod. But hey, I gave Rod the coolest leather jacket in the world, and I
still give me a leather jacket.
I'm pretty sure he has never worn it yet since.
It's almost never cold enough in LA to wear a leather jacket.
Well, I put it
I
on.
I did send it to you.
We needed him for two scenes, and I forgot about it. So I'm fuck, we got to put him in some other clothes. So here, put on this leather jacket I got, Rod. See if that looks cool. And he looked so good. I was you got to keep it, Rod. Just take it. It looks too good. He's brown.
Did you feel badass, Rod?
Yeah, I did feel pretty badass.
He's standing next to Greg Edwards too. Standing next to cool guy Greg and wearing a leather jacket. How much?
It was cool. I played Greg's friend in the movie, and it's honestly the coolest I've ever felt.
You look really cool.
That's nice.
And they're good.
Yeah, Rod does look really cool. Yeah.
Rod's pretty. You guys are right in front of the sun.
Rod looks really great on
film. Yeah, you're sounding great.
Yeah, you're sounding really good.
What we're talking about, great. But I want to talk more about how Clay basically wrote the whole movie. Because you also Clay pitched like there's like only one big twist of any kind, if you want to call it a twist. And Clay pitched it, and I was like, yeah, well, let's just do that. That's what happens with Alex too. Alex Kubitsky gives me notes, and I'm like, yep, those are good. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, you take notes very well in the sense that you instantly take them and apply them to your movie.
Well, because I never come in with any concrete ideas. I'm like, okay, there's these guys, and then they gotta go drop the ashes. And then what do you think? And then everybody else starts to tell me ideas, and I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to be very collaborative, but I want to be the guy that says the final thing.
You know? Right. And your final thing is, yes, of course, I'll use that.
That's a really good idea. I'll take it.
Right. I had a blast filming half of that movie.
Yeah.
And it was a fun time. I think it was. I liked the area that we shot it in. Where did we shoot it?
We're out in Bombay Beach, which is right by the Salton Sea, which is kind of, it's out past Palm Springs, I think, right? Like out east from LA, out in the desert. It's this weird little town. They tried to start like a little resort town next to this lake of a thing. But then like after they built these homes, this little square blockage of stuff, they discovered that the water was like crazy salty and killing any fish that was living there.
Yeah, and it started to stink bad.
And it started to stink from the dead fish and the water. You couldn't go enjoy like the rot. Water.
Yeah.
It started to stink like rot everywhere you go. So like the town fell apart. So now it's just like a half abandoned shanty town of a thing. And we stayed there for 3 nights.
Yeah.
We shot all day.
I got to stay in an RV, which I called and I got the whole thing to myself.
You got one of the best spots.
No one else wanted to stay in the RV?
There was enough other beds, but also nobody did. Yeah. Everybody else was scared to be there. Like it was a dangerous looking place.
Yeah. Cause I said that there's a chance Rod might swing by.
Oh yeah. You were saving space for Rod. Rod's coming back to pick up more of his smell.
That's why everyone was so scared. Was
like, yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah.
Oh. Kurt, where did you stay? I don't remember.
I was in one of the houses. I was in the house that was.
You stayed at Trump Tower.
I stayed at Trump Tower. I was on the 54th floor, the reverse of 45, obviously.
Yes. And that was a political statement you were making, but no one picked it up.
Yeah, because I was the opposite of Trump. It was a political statement I was making on the set that I never made point for anyone to understand.
Yeah.
I was at the house that became Linda's house, our friend of the pod, Anda Saragina. Ever met her?
Yes.
Anna Saragina is in the movie and she's fantastic and she plays.
Wait, did you stay in one of the four beds? There's a room that we called the four bedroom and because it had four beds and it was
one room with four beds.
Yeah.
And I was in one of those. It rocked. I had a great time.
Remember the cartoon where the three bears that lived in that house?
Yeah,
and that lady slept on all the beds.
Yeah.
Then the beds were just side by side like that. That was like the four bedroom, and that's my favorite part of the whole experience.
Was there porridge?
There was porridge. Yes,
there was too much porridge, which we felt guilty about because we didn't like. There's starving kids in Africa, but we were.
And I think it was too cold, and some of this porridge was too hot.
Well, that's funny. You said too cold, but some people did say too hot. So
yes.
Nobody was just right.
Never, rarely. There's no, I don't think so.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's wild how it happens that way sometimes.
So, right. Kurt, what were some movies you were getting amped up watching in order to go make Derek's Dead?
That's a fun question. I'm a big fan of the, I don't know if they're mumblecore or not, but like that almost mumblecore territory of like the Duplass brothers and Joe Swanberg, he makes some stuff with that guy Jake Johnson, who was.
You know who loves the Duplass brothers.
Who's that man?
And who I cannot stop talking about them, and talks about them when they talk to me all the time. Ooh. It's my own mother.
Hell,
my mom
is a Duplass fan.
My mom loves them. She goes, "You need to see Blue Jay. Blue Jay is so good. And have you seen Paddleton? Paddleton's so good."
That's your mom sounds like a 13-year-old girl.
She is. Oh. I'm two.
Two, yeah.
That sounds right, yeah.
That adds up.
Uh-oh.
Got to be three tops.
Kurt, your audio went just haywire then. Dude. Did you say something cancelable and your computer's trying to save you?
I did.
Okay, cool.
Computer.
Yes.
That's actually really, that's a good feature for your computer.
Yeah, it's ready. I programmed it in. I just put in all my keywords that I say that are bad. and it just kind of immediately shuts the computer down when it knows I'm about to say it. It's that smart.
Kurt, you're the king of two camera. You're two camera Kurt is what we call you.
Yeah, that's the Hollywood term. Yeah.
Because we shot every scene with two cameras, and honestly, all the scenes just flew by.
Yeah, that's the benefit of it, right? I mean, that's how we shot it in basically 5 days, because we can blow through scenes so fast because we don't have to bother with like three or four different setups and all sorts of coverage. I just like to shoot. I mean, I want to shoot. It's not for efficiency's sake that I do it, because I just want everything to be that natural and sincere. I want each reaction to be a real reaction to the line we just saw from the other person. Like, I want that sincerity in every scene. So I want to shoot two cameras, and then whoopsie daisy, look at that. It's actually super efficient because we can just blow through things all day long. And it's like, it only takes like...
Rod loves blowing through things.
Yeah.
Rod blows.
What does that mean?
Yeah, we don't know yet. He blows through his pants whenever he farts. No, I know what it means. It means he blows through his pants whenever he farts.
That's what I thought it meant, too.
That's like a private thing, and I don't think you need to tell everybody that.
When Rod walks around, it looks like he just got done sitting on cartoon dynamite.
Yeah.
A bunch of just sharp pieces of pants sticking out in a circle.
Yeah.
If you're ever hanging out with Rod and he suddenly starts running really fast out of nowhere, it's because he farted and it just pushed him.
And his legs went limp and they're just like hitting the ground and it looks like he's running.
But he's actually floating away from the force of the fart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kurt, when did you know that this crap was done? This is the hardest part of making anything. Jesus, is like,
Christ, I don't know.
How do you know it's finished?
I still think I fucked up somewhere.
I'm still
waiting for someone to be like, "Ooh, you know what? There's like 5 seconds of black in the middle of the scene. You fucked up."
What's your biggest mess up? I feel like you've had one. Like, you exported and there was some... Was there ever, like, a mess-up like that? There's something
there
like
was,
that.
There was... I don't remember a significant mess-up, but I lost my mind with the color correction.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I just went around in different circles. Like, we shot it in a way... The way we shot it in 4K, there was, like, not a lot of color. I forget something about the raw footage. Like, it's not a lot of color, but it's all there. You can, like...
You shoot it in a log, like a log setting. Like, it's, like, where it's washed out.
Yeah, which I don't understand. So then,
since it's washed out, it gives you like the most flexibility when it comes to like color correcting it afterwards.
Yeah, which makes sense, but I didn't understand it, and I still barely understand it, so it doesn't make.
And
sense.
I only understand it because I built the cameras before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
because you're a camera head.
You know, I remembered something about Kurt's movie. When Kurt first started, he wanted to shoot the movie. He asked me if he could use my apartment because he needed a sad single man's apartment.
Yeah,
and then he stepped in there and he goes,
yep.
"Oh, geez, this is even worse than I thought, man. I can't do this."
No, it was perfect. Like I it wasn't even like it still sounds like fake spin, but I think like Rod has a minimalist style of it. Like I just knew about him. I knew he wouldn't have like a bunch of gaudy decorations. And
for people that don't know like what minimalist style means, it's like you have just like a little trash in this corner, just a little trash in that corner.
One tiny frame on the wall for some reason, kind of behind the TV.
I just moved my TV, so there's like,
okay.
That used to be where my three pictures were.
Yeah.
There's also, another cool thing is I gotta let Whit back in. And there's another cool thing about Rod's apartment is he has a really cool deadbolt that's inside of his apartment that says
like one of the chain ones?
In case of police.
Under. Whoa, that's badass, Rod.
Yeah. I mean, it's
coming for him, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, Rod, I need a really sad guy's apartment. Can I shoot in yours? And he said, okay. And I went over and checked it out and I went, man, this is perfect. And we were going to do it, but then for one reason or another, we changed it, and I just shot it at my apartment. And then I can't remember if I still needed it or I felt guilty, but I was like, Rod, come stand next to Greg.
I got to stand next to Greg for my starring role in your movie.
He's one of the stars. He's the runaway
and that's,
star.
That's actually the twist of the movie is that Rod's not in it for longer.
Yeah, the movie called Derek Dead. You think it's about Derek Dead, but then all of a sudden, whoops, Rod Derek. So
you introduce Rod, and then he never comes back. And that's sorry to spoilers, but
sorry.
I guess you come back.
He comes back at the end, but not really in a prominent way.
Yeah.
No offense.
He kind of doesn't need to be there when he comes back. It's kind of unnecessary at that point.
I mean, even really when I'm there the first time, I don't really need to be there.
So, Rod, Kurt, so you wanted Rod's apartment because you needed the apartment of a sad, lonely man. But why do you need my Camry, which is now Rod's Camry, which is kind of funny if you think about it.
Which is really funny. I think because I drove my old Prius for like my character's car, but then we get in a separate character's car for a reason I don't remember. It might not have mattered, but we just get in a separate car. So I just needed another car. And I don't think Joe McAdam, the guy who drives the other car, I don't think he could use his. So I was like, who has a car that's very average and I don't think they care about?
And Thank you.
Wit came up.
Yes, right.
So Joe McAdam, famously a comedian who's really great.
Famously.
He has an old ball and chain, which Clay knows all about. And yes, they don't like you letting actors and directors borrow your car.
The last thing you want to come home and say to your old missus is my buddy's going to borrow the car for a movie.
So you did let somebody borrow your car and they did ruin it.
The shit.
Yeah, yeah. One time somebody borrowed my car for a shoot and they wrecked it and the bumper fell off and they didn't tell me. And then they gave it back to me and I drove for 5 seconds and the bumper fell off.
Who was that? Dude, out there. Let's freaking dox them.
I'll tell you after the pod.
Can I say it right now? I'll just say it. It's Martin Scorsese.
I knew it, dude. He did the same thing to me with my helicopter.
It was for Irishman.
Yes.
So one other question. Who colored this bad boy?
Yeah, that was me. Why? We were just talking about it. Did you hear it?
Yeah, but who did it? Like,
this is where I lost my mind. This is the one step in the process where I almost broke in half completely because it started from that washed out 4K thing and I had to figure out the color and I took it to a friend to color it. And I was like, I don't know, maybe like this. And then he did it like that, and like through a couple sessions of us like giving notes. And then by the time I had that from him, I was like, wait, I don't like this either. And then I figured out how to do it in Premiere myself. So I was like, oh, never mind. I'm just going to mess with it myself. And then I had to text my friends like, hey, I'm doing a bunch of other stuff. Thank you. But do you still want to be credited? And he said, no, don't credit me.
So you canceled him.
And then I spent months.
You canceled him.
I canceled him. His career's over. Bye. Nice knowing you, Nate. Good luck with your second kid. And I just did months and months of going through it over and over and over and obsessing. And I look at it now and I'm like, that doesn't look right. What did I do there?
I don't think it looks so bad.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
think
nobody
so.
Else has noticed. So it's all in my head, of course.
So it's in your head, my man. Yeah, you were flipping out the whole – just – I mean, even from writing it, you looked more stressed than I've ever seen a man in my life.
Well, I was already – like the whole – my main motivation to make it was – I think I have to leave. I'm not doing well. I think I have to get out of LA. I got to do like one big thing before I go. Cause if I go, I might go forever. I might be giving up forever. So I was like, I got to do one more thing before I get out of here. And that thing ended up being a feature film.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm the type of guy who, me and Clay are working on something. Clay will like get 12 hours of sleep and wake up well rested and come on to set. Whereas I couldn't sleep, had nightmares. I've aged 40 years. I'm pulling all my hair out because how stressed out I am. And that lasts usually.
I mean, so visibly, he really does age 4 years. And so like when he goes onto set, he looks like he's 24.
Yeah. Wow. Because he's only 20.
And so, and then that won't end until people see it, until like I show people. And then Clay's the opposite. He doesn't even care if people watch it.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter to him at all. So whereas like that's the only thing that gives me relieves my stress. So when did it end for you, the like stress and the night stress and the panic and all that shit?
It barely did. I don't even know if it did.
Like, I remember even when you premiered it, you looked stressed.
At the premiere, we did a friend and family screening at the Downtown Independent in LA. You guys all came. I was miserable. I was not comfortable. I was actually getting very sick, but I was not comfortable at all. I was in the back. I was in the hallway. I was pacing around. The one moment there was this fun big twist that I was not confident or not sure of. I wasn't sure how it was going to be, how it was going to get reacted to, but it got a great reaction. And that was like maybe 10 seconds of like, okay, nice. I did a good thing. But as soon as the movie was over and it was time for everyone to come speak to me and look me in the eyes and for me to have to speak back, I was a mess again. And then even like trying to promote it now, just telling people, please go pre-order it. I think it's good. I'm already like stressed out.
Well, that's
like,
the second.
They're going to hate it. Like, they're going to rent it and they're going to hate it. And I'm the worst and I'm a failure.
So, yeah. For me, it's like people see it and then that lets me relax a little bit. And then I feel okay until I start being asked to promote it. Uh-huh. And then I start to feel sick and I get anxious and I can't drink coffee because it makes me want to bang my head through the wall.
Yeah.
And it's just like an endless cycle. And I think the only cure for this is fame. Because if you have fame, then you're getting constant like validation from, I don't know, the internet or something.
Yeah.
So well, this is how
you're just like financially comfortable and you have you have a career. So like, okay, I'll live with that anxiety because like, at least I'm going to be rich and people think I'm famous.
Right.
This is how Kurt talks to me. He texts me while he's making a movie. He goes, I hate myself. I hate everything and I want to die. And then 2 minutes later, he goes, hey, I have another idea for another movie I want to make.
I'm lucky in that regard. Like as much as I get stressed out, like I don't know. I was going to say I'm still able to like keep going and push through it. With that said, the movie fucked me up. There was a month, I'd say at least a month after the movie was done, I would wake up in the middle of the night, at least once a night, in a panic, thinking, more often than not thinking, oh fuck, we need Witt's car again, but I already gave Witt's car back. I got to go get Witt's car. Oh my God, oh my God. But the movie's done. We had nothing to shoot that day. I was just like, it was, you know, I don't want to sound like a wimp trying to steal the thing of a soldier's, but it felt like PTSD.
No, that's what we do on this podcast.
We steal the thing. It's all about stolen valor.
Yeah.
So well, I'm like, yeah, I got PTSD. I've been through just as much as vets at that point.
Yeah, I did the same thing. The sleeping thing was just like, yeah, right, give me a fucking break.
Oh, yeah, I didn't sleep much at all. I was getting up, especially when we were out in Bombay Beach. Like we shot on my birthday. My birthday, my 35th birthday, was the worst day of the whole shoot.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I got up at like 4 the next morning and walked around all the locations we had for that day and like mentally like got every shot ready to go. Like knew exactly where everything was going to be because that was the problem the day before. I didn't see everything clearly enough and it just like messed our day up and it dragged. And it was the worst day of my life because I was
you did
a bad day that like didn't go well and everyone was stressed and there was a meal situation and everyone was upset about not getting food at a certain time.
I will say this. I'll tell you my experience with the movie is I hated that the cameras were so heavy, but besides that, it was incredibly easy on my behalf and I wasn't sweating at all.
Well, and like that's one thing I tried to say with you. I think as much as it was great to have you behind one of the cameras, you were more there to just make sure I wasn't shooting anything stupid.
Like, yeah, like you were really stressed about the trailer scene.
Was I? Oh, the home run thing?
No, it's like the breaking point in the movie or like the most like emotional point in the movie.
Yeah.
That you had to shoot. And that's where I was like, Kurt might not survive.
Yeah.
After this.
Oh, God. Yeah, at the end of my birthday day, the one in the RV.
Yeah.
In your RV. Yeah, no, that shot, I was about dead.
Yeah, and I was really stressed about it too because you guys were in my RV and I didn't, and I wanted everyone to leave so I can get nice.
You wanted to climb into bed and get cozy and relax.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think that won't happen again. I think I've to get heavy with it. I think I've gone through some good mental, emotional work.
I think it gets easier. I think it gets easier.
I think I'll trust myself more. I mean, I'm still bugging Clay every week with like a new idea, and I want that's the problem. Clay's experience is unique because I just think Clay's right about everything. So I always want to hear Clay's answer or Clay's opinion. There's like only two people I need to hear from at this point in terms of like getting notes or anything, and Clay is one of them. So like
Clay and God,
Clay. Yeah. And the Lord.
And I get my stuff from the Lord too.
So it's
I get all my stuff too from my past knowledge of being in the US Army and the Marines.
Yeah. See, vice versa. Rod just listens to Satan.
Yes.
Rod only listens to the devil because he's a 666 guy.
Yeah. That is true. Because that's the cool stuff.
Which is the scariest. Red. Huh?
Rod's TV stand is red. I don't think anybody can see it.
Yeah.
I think it's red. Cool.
I told Rod that the scariest thing in the world is 666, and he agreed with me, but it turned out he thought I said sit.
Yeah, which is like a dog thing.
No, because he likes to look at asses.
Yeah,
he doesn't want people to sit.
People are sitting, because then I can't see the ass.
Because that makes him think about people sitting on the toilet of all places, which is where the precious brown goes.
And that's when you're sitting on the toilet, you're hiding the poop, which is what is.
Get out of there, don't.
That's evil.
If I had my way to shoot, you know, you hear about shooting movies back in even just like 10 years ago and how they would have 6 months to shoot a movie. And nowadays you only get maybe 30, unless it's a Marvel movie. And even then it's like 2 months.
Yeah.
What was the turnaround of this movie?
From when to what? What's the back end?
So when you knew you got the green light to make the movie to when the movie was like done shooting, like it didn't feel like you had much time when it was greenlit to when you're actually like shooting it.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Cause I think, like I said, like the nature of why I was even trying to make it, I really just had to go. I couldn't hesitate or be patient. I had to make sure it happened as soon as possible. So I didn't lose this momentum of I have to make something right now before I run away. So like I just pushed it really fast myself. That was mostly on me. I think shooting it on my 35th birthday was important for some reason. That doesn't make any sense now.
No, because of 35 millimeter.
That's what it was. Sorry. Yeah. Blah, duh. 10
and wait,
45, Donald.
And wait, what was I interrupting? You jogged an idea of mine and I just steamrolled.
I don't know.
Now, Kurt.
Oh, yes, I remember. The dream, because it takes used to get such a long time to make a movie, and it's like in movies used to be better, you know, a lot better, right? I mean, Hollywood productions used to be kind of more consistently.
We're specifically talking about the Stupids, yes.
I mean, if the Stupids came out right now, truly, if that was like a straight to Netflix movie, the Stupids, we would be watching it, and we'd be going. Wow, this is actually – I don't love this, but I respect this.
Oh, I would be laughing. I would be howling at the moon like a damn werewolf.
One of the better movies of 2020, I bet.
Yeah. So – and I think it's because of this time stuff. My dream would be to have 30 days of a shoot and then 30 days of reshoots. Right? Like about – take a week break.
My dream is I only need a week. I want a week. I want $100,000, and I'm shooting nine to five. I'm shooting like we're starting at nine. We're done by five. We're hanging out at night. We're all like staying on the same property, and we just like everybody makes money, but nobody's getting rich. And we just make one movie a year.
Well, we shot Sword of Trust in 11 days.
Yeah,
and that felt like plenty of time. Nobody was running around stressed out, and we had about that budget, I think.
Maybe yeah, like, I mean. Yeah, two weeks, 10, 12 days is probably much more realistic, but I bet I could shoot any movie I want to shoot in 7 days.
Oh, yeah, because if you think about it, I mean, every short film I've ever shot has been 3 days or something.
Mm. Yeah.
And then that's usually 15 minutes long. You give me 12 days, I got a feature film.
Yeah, well, and I don't care about anything cinematic. Like, back to, like, the two-camera thing, I kind of want everything to almost look like a documentary. So I don't need, like... Great
documentary. Is how it's pronounced, actually.
How do you say it, Clay?
Documentary.
So, yeah, you want everything to be like, you know, where this is cinema verite.
Yeah, because I know what that means, for sure.
This is just natural light.
All right, yes. For people that don't know what cinema verite is, it's it means wiggle camera, where a camera wiggles.
wiggle, wiggle.
Because Clay can't carry the thing for too long.
Yeah, because it's shaking. Way too heavy. I do remember Clay's
only 3 years old.
I do remember editing the like when Kurt was editing it, okay. And I was like going through footage. I go, man, I was really wiggly this day.
Yeah. Whoa, Clay. There was a lot of that in the edit. Well, Clay, where are you going? Where are you going?
Clay got a long day with the big camera. He's gonna be really tired.
No, I do remember being on set where I'm like, I'm bored. I think I'm gonna wiggle.
Well, I think that day you were puking every other take. We had 20 minutes of footage of you like forgot to turn the camera off.
Yeah. I was thinking about puking.
Yeah, you just had to puke, man.
Did you film any of your puke?
I didn't film any of the puke. That was my mistake.
He made a point to go pretty far away every time he did it.
Yeah, because it stank. Hoppy IPAs.
Did you have to do any pickups or reshoots?
We did one pickup. We didn't reshoot anything, but we added one shot of me getting dropped off at a lift. It took 30 minutes.
Which is my favorite scene of the whole movie.
It's a fucking great scene. It got Cornell in the movie, and it's got a good joke.
Oh, yeah, that's with Joe McAdam in the beginning?
Cornell Reed, when he drops me off at night, right in front of his house.
Ah, yes.
He drops me back off at my car. And we did a thing. Oh, that's one of my proudest filmmaking things in the whole movie.
That was really hard.
We had to light us in the car, but like just the actual car light itself from the door opening wasn't enough. So Clay or somebody, we had a little light that we set up on the center console thing. And then I had to physically turn the light on at the same time I opened the door to make it look like the car light, but it wasn't. So I had to like be acting and like tired talking to this Lyft driver, like, thanks, man, I'll tip you. And like, but I'm still pushing this button as I open the door. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, you have to look tired. You're in the middle of a sentence and you have to like get the timing right.
Yeah, and I nailed it every time.
You honestly did.
That's cool.
And it's a good scene. And we shot that scene. We might as well have shot that one on like a cell phone and it looks fine.
I just shot something where I had to have barbecue sauce in my hands. But the first part of the scene, you don't want to see that I very obviously have barbecue sauce in my hands. Mm-hmm. So in the scene, a person goes, oh my God, do you have barbecue sauce in my hands? But it's like midway through the scene. She's like, oh, do you have barbecue sauce on your hands? And I'm like, oh yeah. But because we didn't want to reveal the barbecue sauce too quickly, right, for the first part of the scene, I don't actually have any barbecue sauce in my hands. And then while she's talking, I had to dip my hands in a barbecue sauce cup.
While you're pretending to listen to her, though.
Yeah. And then
separate action. That's
and
fun.
Then she says, "Oh my God, you have sauce on your hands?" And I pull my hand out of the cup, and that was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do as an actor.
Yeah, no, that sounds really hard, but it sounds also really fun. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I want to do stuff like that, but with the cameraman. I want to get more creative with my two cameras. Of like, maybe a guy follows a character in from behind, and then once he gets set. And we deliver the first line, everyone freezes, and then like the second cameraman pops up to where he would have been in the shot previously, but now he's just picking up coverage of the guy who was being followed in the first place.
I think that's called economic shooting.
Uh-huh. I'm a big economics guy.
Yeah, me too. Econ. That's why in everything I've ever made, I'm 1 inch tall in the frame because I just like to get it all.
Just want more space.
Just get it all at once.
There's scenery to get. It's tough to see what you're saying, but.
Yeah,
Rod, you're an economic guy, right? Oh no, you're a libertarian. Sorry, the same thing, right?
I mean, I'm not really. I'm not a libertarian. So,
Rod, you come for money. Sorry, you come for money.
Well, that is true. I mean, that's true.
All right, so Kurt, you have your movie in your head, right? Yeah. And then you make your movie that you want to make, and then you watch your movie that you made. Tell me how that evolves.
In my mind.
Like you know, whenever I make something, I have something in my head, and it's very specific, and then I make it, and it turns out nothing like it's in my head, and I just have to deal with it the rest of my life.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, I went through all that in the writing process, I think. Like, there was so many different drafts. You saw all of them. Like, there was 5 different movies over the time of that. So by the time we settled on what we were shooting with, I was good with it. So in terms of what it ended up as, outside of like wishing I would have been a little more creative with some of my frames, I'm like mostly fine with it.
Yeah.
But I think it's because I went through so many different versions of it in the first place. And I think one very beautiful thing of knowing you're just going to improvise everything nothing's too precious. This isn't like the best concept ever. I even, when I was developing the idea, I specifically started from a point of like, I'm going to follow that super basic Dan Harmon story circle structure. I'm going to pinpoint each little spot and I'm going to make very specific scenes.
Yeah, I saw that you did the Dan Harmon circle, but you skipped the Pickle Rick part. Why did you choose that?
Well, at that point, Pickle Rick was still so fresh that I didn't want to look like I was just kind of like copying it or ripping it off.
I understand.
Whereas if it came out this year, like maybe it'd be a cool callback and I would have stuck with the Pickle Rick.
Right.
But because he was still so cool and so funny, I thought it was uncool to put him in my structure.
Well, he's still cool initially. I read one of the original outlines and there was Okra Bob.
That was my attempt at going around the current popularity of said Pickle Rick. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it didn't stick. It didn't work. Okra. Yeah. Nobody likes okra anymore.
Yeah. Hey, I say this? I'm Googling. I Googled Derek's dead, and the first thing that comes up is a YouTube video of Derek's death scene on Grey's Anatomy. Can you speak on that?
Did you watch that before you made the movie?
Yeah. Well, I've Googled it every day since, and I don't like that it comes up either. I still haven't watched that scene. I hope it's different than how he dies in my movie. I haven't checked.
Right.
It could be the same. Now that I think about it, it's a very common death.
And the way he died in your movie is he was in the same room with Rod's character.
He was in the same room. Yeah. So Derek, at one point, we didn't know this. We learned this later. Derek was in the same room as Rod's character, which was named, what was your name, Rod?
I think my name was Rod.
That's right. It was Rod. and Derek was in the same room as Rod, and Rod does what he does. Rod rips one, blows through his pants. Mm-hmm. But Rod has nowhere to go because Rod was already right in front of a wall. So the force all went backwards, hit Derek, and he kind of broke his neck from there.
Damn. That's good that that's what comes up when you Google Derek's dead, because when you Google the golden one.
A white supremacist from like Switzerland or something.
A white supremacist bodybuilder comes up.
That's
cool. YouTube is mad at me because of that.
You guys should hang out.
YouTube is mad at you?
Yeah. On all the comments on all the golden one, like, press or whatever, it's just people saying
this is not the white nationalist I came to see,
this is not the true golden one,
right?
Oh fuck, so they're like coming for you.
So Kurt, I'm just curious about, I don't have that many friends that actually made feature films, and I just want to know everything there is to know about making films. Do you ever think about how you don't want to direct and act at the same time and produce and edit and do all everything at once?
You know what? I know it's obnoxious and I make jokes about it all the time. It's probably really stupid to do it that way. But the specifically directing while acting, I didn't find that hard at all. The producing, I could give up forever. I don't want to produce ever again.
Yeah,
that destroyed me. That made having to remember where the prop gun is what destroyed my ability to be relaxed in the directing and acting. You know what I mean? So I was like also trying to schedule and like keep track of people and props, and I just wanted to be like, ooh, let's do it like this, and then I'll do this, and you'll do that. Okay, are we ready to shoot? Cool, let's do it. Like I just want to be in that part of it. And because of the improvised nature of the stuff, I would like direct in the middle of scene. Like, okay, wait, go back, do this again, do it like this, give me this specifically. And then we would just fly with it, which again makes it that much more efficient and it's easy to get through these scenes. But that's not, it still might be really stupid to do all of that on your own, because the same thing for editing. I want to see it, man. I want to be in control of it. I want to pick the best scenes and put the best scenes.
Did you edit it?
Most of it, yeah. Clay helped a lot and Bud helped some too.
I helped me helping was like minimal. You edited a lot of this movie. Well, normally when I help out with friends, I'm doing a lot of editing, but for this, I'm like,
well, that was a nice little glimpse of what we were talking about earlier with, of like a little bit of comfort that maybe I did something okay. Cause when I did most of the editing and all along, it's like, I'm going to do a crazy rough, whatever pass. And then Clay's going to take over and he's going to do the real editing. But by the time Clay saw it, he like did a couple cuts. Like he didn't do much, and he was like,
"I just like took some stuff out." I think when you like make a movie with that's like improv, it's like hard to pick out. Like
change. Yeah.
When I work on my own stuff and I edit, I'm so precious and I don't want to cut anything out. But like when someone makes me cut something out, it's like worth it.
Right.
How long was the first cut of the movie?
Not much longer than what it is now.
Yeah, right now it's an hour 13.
Right now it's an hour 13. It was hour 30, hour 35 maybe. Like we cut a decent amount, but it was still only around an hour and a half. And that was my goal all along. I wanted between an hour and an hour and a half. I wanted to make a short movie because I knew nothing I wanted to make was that important that it needed to go longer than that.
I think like, an hour 13 is a perfect length for a movie.
It's perfect. I love just little adventure movies. Some buddies get into some trouble and then whoops, it gets worse. Okay, we got to get out of this trouble. It takes a week. It takes 2 days. I think Derek's Dead goes over 3 days maybe, the whole course of the movie. So I don't need more than an hour and a half, even an hour barely.
Do you think the movie might have been better if you would have grown your hair out for it?
Yeah, I'm trying to now, man. You've been pushing that for me for years. And I'm trying to grow it out now, and I think I've got it in a place where I don't have to touch it for a while.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Let it grow.
I'm going to go for it, man. I realize the trick is once I couldn't handle it anymore, I'd get a normal cut with the side short.
No.
But now what I'm doing, I'm just trimming around the ears and the bottom of the neck. So then it looks sharp again, but everything's getting longer.
No, you just wear a hat for about 3 months.
Hats, too. Yeah, I should do that.
All right, cool.
How do you like to see people with the long hair?
I get frustrated when I see people who have nice hair, like Kurt or Clay or even you, but you had long hair.
Well, he also likes long hair because, like, whenever you step out of line, he can grab it, pull it to the floor, and he can tell you to shut up, bitch.
Yeah.
He does like do control. That.
Yeah. A lot of
control. All right. It's just frustrating. I want to see my guy Kurt with these nice locks.
Man, it's coming. I'm telling you, bro.
Yeah.
Okay, Kurt, you have a thing at 5, right? That's fine. Okay. So that's Kurt Neal. Your movie is, where can you pre-order this movie?
Right now it's only available on iTunes. It's available for pre-order. If you can afford it, it's really cool. It makes us look good. It helps us out. It supports, you know,
indie and review it and stuff like
reviews
that.
Reviews are cool.
And stars.
So it's only on iTunes now. But official release is December 15th.
All right, and okay.
Which is Christmas Day.
Rod, what do you give the movie?
I give the movie a 10 out of 10.
Okay, what do you give this movie?
I give it a 10 out of 10. I'll tell you why. It's inspiring. It's that Kurt made the movie. It's funny. Kurt's obviously a star. It's got a star-studded cast and a surprise great performance from my main man, Joe McAdam. It's great to see him in a film. Also, it's great to see the guys being funny and having fun, and the girls. And Clay is there, and he's funny behind the camera.
Okay. All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Clay Tatum, and this is my review of the movie Derek's Dead, directed by Kurt Neal. I like movies that take risk, and Derek's Dead is a movie that definitely takes a risk. Because if you have a set and you get Rod on that set, you're taking a huge risk. And I think for being such a risk taking filmmaker and making such a risky movie, I give Derek's Dead a 10 out of 10.
Wow. Thanks.
Wow.
Guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so,
of course.
Kurt, you made a genuinely funny movie, and it's weird because people don't make funny movies anymore. And everyone who's listening, please pre-order it on iTunes, and in the reviews, give it a score out of 10. Yeah, so like a 10 out of 10 is an option.
If there's 4 stars or whatever available, write in 10 out of 10.
Right.
And also, you got to watch this movie because it's a good, fun movie to watch, and it will inspire you to make a movie. But you also should just fucking watch it because it's an hour and 13
minutes. Yeah, like, come on. What the fuck?
It's like, what are you guys going to do?
It's easy. It's easy.
So support cinema, pre-order it right now, review it. And if we get enough reviews, it's going to be on the New York Times best movies.
It's going to make national news.
Yeah, it's going to make national news. So do that. And, yeah. So, Kurt, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, the boys.
I can't wait to make your other movie.
Thanks, Kurt.
That I'm going to make you make.
Really postropedic.
I got 6 of them on the wall, man. You want to be a part of the next one or not?
Yeah, I told you there's only one that I want you to make. So make that one.
That's the one that's the most thought out. Okay, we're good.
Yeah, so make that one and I'll help you make it.
All right.
All right, cool. Sounds good, everyone. Okay. everyone listening to the podcast, you know what to do. Buy this movie. Okay. Bye, gang.
Bye.
Bye.